Hello, and welcome to 3 and 2. It's the Tiny Plastic People podcast, specifically about Match Play in the Age of Sigma, at the, if we're being quite generous to ourselves, mid-table level. The name 3 and 2 is aspirational, I think you said earlier. I am your host, Matthew Ward. If you'd like to buy a really competitive Night Owl army, sight unseen, 400 quid is what I'm looking for at the moment. And then with me tonight are the other hosts, Laura Bates.
Hello.
And Rich Nutter.
Hello. How's it going?
I'm doing good. So jumping in is like a episode zero where we sort of get to know you. Getting to know all about you. Could you please tell me a little bit about who you are and your maybe a little brief Age of Sigma history or wargaming history? Doesn't have to be Age of Sigma. Rich, you're being pointed at.
I've been nominated. So, yeah, my name's Rich Nutter. I am a wargamer. This instantly gone off the rails. Yeah, I've been playing AOS since. Really since the start of second edition, so the Soul Wars box kind of era. So the first project, I didn't actually buy that box to start with. The first project I remember doing was some what were then called Beast Claw Raiders for my local Games Workshop's Malign Portents event. So actually, Malign Portents, was that pre-AOS 2?
It was. It was indeed, yeah.
So, yeah, I did that just as kind of a hobby project, never really played. And the first time I really got into playing Age of Sigmar was actually at a meetup in 2018 that some of us attended, some of our sort of extended friend group. And yeah, I've been kind of playing since then, attending a reasonably large number of tournaments, but they tend to be sort of the bigger ticket things of the year, probably three or four a year. So we've done some Brotherhood team tournaments, some blackouts in Cardiff, and the occasional little local one day, as Matthew kind of highlighted, 3-2 is definitely aspirational rather than realistic.
It's achievable.
Yeah, I guess I tend to focus on like the hobby side of things mostly. So I will put together an army that I think looks good and looks like an army, let's say, rather than being like terrific. 18 of the same unit, and then it gets smashed to pieces. But it's good, and I meet lots of nice people while I do it. So, yeah, that's what I like about AOS.
Nice. Okay, and how about yourself then, Laura?
Hi, I'm Laura. I'm a London-based wargamer. I play Warhammer Underworlds and Age of Sigmar, so I got into AOS through Underworlds, really, at about the same time as Rich. So I think the start of AOS 2nd Edition was what prompted me to get into it. I haven't done a huge amount of tournaments. I was kind of in a position of just before COVID hit, I was thinking, hey, 2020 is going to be the year I go to loads of AOS events, and that didn't really work out. So I've done a few. I think I've only done one solo two-day AOS event, at which I went 3-2. So nice. Perfect for this nice. Podcast.
That's good. You're very on brand.
That's probably going to be the best, because that was when I was using Gargants at the height of Gargants being quite good, so I feel like it's all downhill from here. I think similar to Rich, I really like the hobby angle of things, so I really enjoy painting. I don't particularly enjoy the list building aspect of the competitive game, so probably my favorite way to play Age of Sigmar is to put two non-optimal armies on a table and then try and do as well as I can to win a game. So while I have quite a few armies, I don't think I have any army that I could make what I would consider to be the best possible list for that faction with. But I'm fine with that, really. I'm quite happy just putting the models I like on the table and then seeing what happens.
And the models you like are primarily Dwardin?
Yeah, I have one of every Dwardin army, and then I started painting other things because I ran out of Dwardin options. But, you know, maybe there'll be some more in future. We'll see.
Have to admit to being slightly surprised when you didn't saw all of your Gargant's legs off at the knee and just reattach the foot.
I'm still expecting the second Cities of Sigmar dwarf-based army.
Maybe one day. There's only so many Cities of Sigmar armies I'm prepared to paint, just because they might get squatted and then I would be sad.
Yeah, it's going to happen, for sure. Last and least, I am Matthew. I have been playing Age of Sigmar pretty much since release. So a friend picked up the original starter box and I did not want to paint those horrible corn models and cobbled together my old sort of Warhammer Fantasy undead, and I've been pushing them around the tables ever since. I think, quite like you, Laura, I'd sort of planned on playing a lot more competitive events just before COVID hit. I've had the double whammy of COVID and newborn baby, which has paid going to too many, but we're hoping to play some more in the future. I think scraping together some more stuff now that we're all pretending that COVID's over, for, at the very least.
Enough for tournament gaming, at least.
Yeah, I mean, totally safe, right? I felt super safe at Blackout.
look, it's fine. Sometimes you've got to make sacrifices for wargaming.
I didn't get COVID, so what can I really complain about? So you both talked about your love of the hobby. What have you been painting recently? Because you're both infamous as, like, just painting machines.
Infamous?
Well, infamous.
Thanks for making it sound negative. Go on, Laura, you can go first.
So I started a year painting the Cool Boys half of Dominion, which I won in a charity raffle just before Christmas, which was great. And that was really fun. I really enjoyed painting the Cool Boys. So definitely going to go back and add to them at some point. But more recently, I've been working on a Slaves to Darkness army that I started late last year. So I painted Bellicor last week, I think, which was really fun. I really, really like the new Bellicor model. I've been looking forward to painting him since I got him for a Christmas present. And I'm really pleased with how he came out. So that was great. And now I am working on a converted Chaos War Shrine for the same army. So my concept for them is that they're an ex-Anvil Guard army who fell to Chaos while seeking revenge on Marathi and the Daughters of Cain for the destruction of Anvil Guard. So my Chaos War Shrine is a sort of kit bash between the Chaos War Shrine kit and the Daughters of Cain Cauldron of Blood, which has created the spikiest model I have ever built. And there have been several blood sacrifices in the process of putting it together. But it's mostly built now.
If nothing else, that's very thematic.
Yeah, indeed. I'd just like to go on record as saying your Bellicor is fantastic. I really like the colours you've chosen. I think
he's really nice.
Really, really good on the table.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I really like the Bellicor model as well. I'm not much of a Chaos guy in general, but Bellicor is a nice kit.
Yeah, really, really good. Matthew, go.
Oh, God, what hobby have I been doing? I sort of just finished painting a massive pile of sharks for my Odinath Deepkin. An army that's taken me about 3 years to paint. And I keep painting a model and going, all right, this army's finished. And then it's not. So at the moment, I'm convincing myself that I don't need to paint more Thralls and I don't need to paint Octopus Man and that the army is truly, finally finished. And what's staring at me and giving me the fear at the moment is a big, big pile of bone splitters because, if nothing else, I'm a glutton for punishment. But I'm sort of finished that in between painting at the moment, sort of in a hobby lull. After, I don't know, I think I spent the best part of 2 years painting pretty much just Deepkin and suffered intense burnout as a result. when you said you don't like painting 18 of the same unit, I sort of stared at the eels in my cupboard.
God, yeah.
Which isn't 18 is the same unit because it's 21.
Yeah.
What I really like about your Deepkin though is that you haven't used the same colour scheme for everything. So like all of your sharks are a different colour and you've got different eel schemes going on. I think that works really well.
Though I would say, especially if you're someone who decides that shark spam is the Deepkin army for you, don't paint them all in different colours. Come up with a consistent scheme.
Yeah.
It's you make a rod for your own back. Is what you do with that.
Did you base them on like real life sharks?
Some of them, yeah. So there's like a goblin shark inspired one, and there's a stripy spotty ones, whatever they're called.
Tiger shark, nurse shark, something like that.
Something like that. And there's one inspired by that, but some of them are just a pink shark would look good.
Yeah,
it does.
Fair enough.
So that's what they mostly are. How about you, Rich?
Oh, well, I came into this episode thinking, I've not done a lot of AOS hobby recently. I don't know what I'll talk about, but if we're talking about, like, sort of early this year, then yeah, there's a reasonably big list. The main AOS thing that I'm working on at the moment is I'm doing a slow grow New Year, New Army with mutual friend Chris, where we each chose a project for the other, and then each month we send the other person a unit from that army. It's an idea that I shamelessly stole from Ben Mardle of Ebats, because I thought it sounded like fun. I'm sure, I say I stole it from him, I'm sure he's not the only person to have ever done it. Well, presumably there is at least one more. So, yeah, for that I've been painting Khorne Bloodbound, as you put it about 5 minutes ago, those hateful starter set Khorne models. So far I've done a unit of Blood Warriors and a couple of characters, a Slaughter Priest and a Skull Grinder. Putting one hand in the bag that says bone, skull, blood, and another hand in the bag that says, like, Reaper, Splitter,
the one
Smasher,
with the skull flare of it isn't Scar Bloodwrath, right?
Yes, that's the one. Yeah, and then, so what I'm working on this month we said we'd do sort of like chunky elite units or monster. So I sent Chris a Stegodon, and he sent me a box of six Mighty Skull Crushers, the mortal juggernaut cavalry. So they're half assembled on my desk at the moment. Nice. They're quite imposing.
There's a lot of
surface area on a unit of six, I'm telling you that.
Yeah, how much trim are you staring down the barrel of?
Quite a lot. There's not too much. There's not too much trim on the juggernauts themselves, actually. So my corn scheme's kind of like bone plates and red trim. So we just kind of do the whole bone color and then pick the trim out in contrast.
Nice.
Don't have to do that much highlighting then. I think I might do the juggernauts in like a metal color because they're kind of weird demon robots. Very strange. Like, I don't think that a natural conclusion if you'd started at like maybe like the mortal bloodbound stuff and worked.
Yeah.
Sort of work the range from there. I'm not sure that's where you'd have ended up, but they existed already with demons on their backs, I think. So
they're pretty classic old Warriors of Chaos unit, right, as well? Not units of them, but like a hero on a juggernaut, I think, was a thing.
Yeah.
I think in 40K, maybe? I don't remember. Yeah. But they go back quite a long way.
I'm not sure. They're a bit weird, but they're cool.
Very weird.
So that's what I'm working on at the moment. Other than that,
I was hoping
year,
you'd say Khorgarath's, but we'll accept Skull Crushers.
The trouble with the Khorgarath is you can only get it in the Start Collecting box.
I'm going on eBay, right?
Well, no, okay. So, like, from a I am ordering direct from Games Workshop, okay. You can only, you'll probably get it on eBay for about £3. So maybe I'll add some extras once the project is finished and we're left to our own devices. Maybe I'll just add like seven more Khorgaraths.
But Chris could buy a Start Collecting box and then just dish it out to you a bit at a time over a few months.
He could do that, actually. Yeah. I think we probably will have a month where we just go like, right, let's do a Start Collecting box. And maybe it takes longer than a month, but yeah. The other thing, what else have I worked on? I painted some Trogs this year. Gits, you know.
Jesus, I forgot you had Trogs.
Yeah, that's very sort of like occasionally I feel like painting a trog. I paint a trog, but they're very fun. that was prompted by James of TPP converting a very nice custom trog boss for me with a huge amount of sculpting work for over Christmas.
You'd feel really bad if you didn't have an army for that, wouldn't you?
Exactly. Yeah, I'm glad you understand. And I guess that's about it. Painted some Nurgle stuff. So we've got to go back to some of that at some point.
You do?
Yeah, most of my hobby for AOS recently has been making lists and working out what I'm taking to tournaments this year. So.
Yeah, you've got all this fun hobby you want to be doing, but eventually at some point I'll crack a whip and you'll have to paint elves.
Yeah, it's going to be... the list I made today was like, oh, I'll just paint another 30 Sentinels and 10 Wind Chargers, yeah. Great.
Why not? Fuck it. Surely you don't need to paint 30 more sentinels. That's
no, I don't need to.
Okay.
No one needs to.
No one needs to.
I feel like 10 wind charges is a bigger ask. Cavalry always take forever.
Yeah, I have thus far not attempted any Lumineth cavalry other than the one hero. So I keep putting it off.
I painted 3 Dawn Riders last year and then thought I'm going to stop because this is taking ages and I don't want to paint any more elves.
Obviously, as we mentioned in the intros, you're kind of battling against the natural predisposition against elves as well. But
that is true. But they weren't going to be a nice elf army. They were going to be a horrible elf army.
True, yeah.
All elves are horrible. That's why they're
nice
great.
People, it turns out.
I'm fighting the part of my brain that's saying, paint a second Achillean king.
Do you seem extremely good.
Can you take two?
You could take 4. Why not? They're very good.
Maybe after the summer FAQ and points changes.
Yeah, we'll see.
You've got Voltanos as well, right?
I do have a King plus Volti list, and I think Volti is pretty good as well. So we'll see. I think we'll save talking about Deepkin in detail maybe for the future when I've played more than one game with them. But a lot of my lists are sort of, I started off in quite an excited place of I'll have a bit of that and I'll have a bit of that. And then sort of they condense down to, what if I just took the same War Scroll 4 times?
Yes.
Always seems to be the way.
Warhammer.
That's Age of Sigmar. Despite having a Deepkin owner and a Fire Slayer owner on the show, we're going to not talk about them for the moment, I guess, because neither of us have really been playing many to any games with them. I had one deeply brief game, deeply nice, with my fish elves, but wasn't too instructive of anything. Deepkin versus KO is always a kind of one-way traffic, as we've experienced before, I think. It's quite a hard work, especially now that your Namate Thrallscream can have a 5+ ward. Why not?
Just what it needed.
Why not? Yeah, okay. Give them every rule, and then people will put them in their lists.
Well, I have yet to get a game in with new Fire Slayers, but hopefully before our next podcast, I'll give them a try.
Yes. It's exciting. I think I think the Fire Slayer book looks really fun. I hope you have a good time with it.
I think I just need to get my head round lists, because I think the lists I was running before with them, I mean, I haven't even really run Fire Slayers in 3.0, so I need to find a net list that I can copy and then just get them on the table and try. But I'm very excited for Magmadoths to be good, because the Magmadoth is my favourite War Scroll in Age of Sigmar. I love Magmadoths, and they've never quite been as good on the table as I would like, so I'm hopeful that now this will be the time.
Yeah, there seems to be a running theme in both of those new books, Deepkin and Fire Slayers, is like the ability to make one of your hero amounts just absolutely slap people across the chops in combat. Like the smash Achillean King, who's ridiculous, by the way. And what's the choppy Fire Slayer hero called?
Auric Runefather.
The Auric Runefather, they look disgusting as well. I bet they're a lot of fun.
I think you can make them pretty good, so we'll have to try that. I currently only own 2 Magmadoths, and there is quite a strong temptation now to get at least 2 more and do a proper monster mash list. But
have they released them separately yet, or is it still just through the weird setup where you have to buy a whole half Fire Slayer army with them?
They've said they're going to release them separately, but I don't think they have yet, at least not unless I missed it.
Good.
Deepkin and Fire Slayers didn't get Vanguard boxes with their books, did they?
Not yet.
No. One assumes they will, but they're still on the old Start Collectings for now.
Yeah.
Fire Slayer Start Collecting is actually a really good one if you don't already have 50 Volkite Berserkers, at which point it becomes really unnecessary.
Yeah.
The Deepkin win is a good start collector, but not a good buy for this box. So we'll see. Did Maggotkin get one quite quickly afterwards?
They got one at the same time as their book. Yeah.
Weird. There's some stuff in both Deep Human Bias Lair books that's a bit different from the other 3.0 books so far. So who knows what's going on there?
I guess they're still working out
what a 3.0 launch looks like.
Yeah, I mean, they've not had the calmer seas for it, right? So
that's true. Yeah, that's true. Maybe it's stuck on a ship somewhere.
I was going to say, yeah, the Fire Slayer Vanguard box is still in the Suez Canal somewhere.
I guess as well, Deepkin and Fire Slayers had the big box that came out, so maybe they didn't want to release new Vanguard boxes just after that. Would make sense, I guess.
They're also sort of historically two of the least popular armies in AOS. Might have something to do with
it. Yeah, possibly.
Yeah.
That Fury of the Deep box, occasionally still see it on shelves. Ooh. It's a very good deal.
It is a good deal.
Like, it's two actual forces that feel like armies, and it's really well priced. Mm. They're two armies, neither of which are collect. So it'd be a thoroughly
double
stupid
value.
Purchase.
Double, no. Even more value.
No chance of duplicates.
Exactly. Yeah, I didn't buy the box because I don't need any more of anything, but I got scalped and picked up the Thrall Master Solo, which is a lovely mug.
I also didn't buy the box because I didn't need any more of anything, and I have thus far resisted being scalped for a Flamekeeper, but I do quite like the model, so I'm sure at some point I'll end up.
Yeah, he seems a bit nice to have rather than necessary.
Yeah.
Which I think the Thrallmaster is as well, but I like the model.
It's more a completeness thing. There are very few Age of Sigmar dwarf kits I don't have, so it makes me sad that there's another one now.
What don't you have? I want to drill down. What dwarves are we missing?
I don't have the Iron World Arsenal kind of things, so I don't have gyrocopters or gyrobombers, and I don't have a cogsmith.
I've got lots of stuff in my cupboard I could send to you.
And there are some, like, jewel kits I've only done one half of, so I don't have any Auric Hearthguard in my Fast Lair army, and I don't have any hammerers in my Dispossessed army.
What, the hammerers a jewel kit with? The iron
longbeards.
Longbeards, okay.
Yeah, I have longbeards.
The hammerers seem pretty all right.
Yeah.
You have a soul screen bridge.
Yeah, my Dispossessed army is a more narrative army, and I liked the longbeards better aesthetically.
Fair enough. Yeah, they do a pretty similar job, right? Like
the longbeards buff others, so they do they grumble in the hero phase, and it gives a buff to people around them, whereas I think the hammerers are just a bit more hitty.
Fair. Do you have to do the grumble yourself?
You probably did in original AOS, but these days
1.0 War Scrolls.
Take out those War Scrolls. I guess, so if we segue into the... It's not even a segue. Let's just move into the main content. sort of the games we've been playing recently, we've not been playing loads, but we've been sort of trying to make... We've all been trying to make pretty new stuff work, right? This is sort of post-Battle Scroll 1, not Battle Scroll. I've played no games after Battle Scroll 2.
I don't think I have either.
Meaningfully. Not that I've interacted with it at all. So, and also, I guess... post updates for those who have had them, because Laura, you've been trying to make Bone Reapers work.
I have, and they had quite a nice White Dwarf update, which has helped them. They didn't have anything super big, but they got some quite nice battle tactics out of it. And while I am on principle opposed to faction battle tactics in AOS 3, I think Bone Reapers did need the help, because they struggled a bit with some of the generic ones. So I have just been exploiting it and using them as much as I can.
How has that been going for you then?
Mixed, I would say. I'm finding them, I quite enjoy playing them. They're just very different to everything else, because they have the thing where they don't engage with the standard command abilities, which is a really big part of AOS 3. But they do have a lot of their own command abilities and things that they can play with. So it's a bit of an exercise in forgetting how to play AOS and then learning how to play Bone Reapers, which I have far from mastered, but I'm quite enjoying messing around with and seeing how it works.
Yeah. From having played against them prior to the White Dwarf update, it felt like they were still good at playing the objectives, but were not good at battle tactics, even remotely.
like really struggled beyond turn one, advanced three units. So presumably that's been what's been the biggest change for you rather than the slight changes they've had to their command abilities?
Yeah, I think that's fair. The biggest thing that has helped them in ARS 3 overall was that there was an early FAQ that allowed them to use their command abilities more than once in the same phase, which was really essential because Mortec Guard rely very heavily on their shield wall ability, which lets them reroll saves, and allowing multiple units of Mortec Guard to do that was a really big deal. And it also means that if you're Petrifex Elite, you can use the command ability that gives you extra rend multiple times. So I think that was the single sort of biggest fix that has made them work in AOS 3.
So they can use those abilities multiple times, but if you can use Shield Wall and get extra rend in the same time, so that's still locked out.
Yeah, and I think that's right, because that's an interesting decision you have to make, kind of like, is my unit of Mortec Guard going to survive enough that I will benefit from extra rend or not?
Yeah.
So I think that's wise. But yeah, the battle tactics have helped them. There were two of the White Dwarf battle tactics that are not complete gimmies, but are definitely very viable for them. And that has sort of made the difference of being able to compete in close-ish games as opposed to you just realise on turn three you're not going to score another battle tactic, and that's probably it.
I would say that, as you said earlier, this is an anti-faction battle tactic podcast.
Hold on.
You're out of those.
Oh.
But if they'll give them to me, I'll use them. They do feel a bit all over the place.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it depends a bit what happens with battle tactics when there's a new General's Handbook, I think. But I think if battle tactics gets to the point when the vast majority of the time you're going to score five battle tactics in a game, it makes them much less interesting than if whether or not you score your battle tactics is the thing that is the decider in a game. And I worry that some armies have gone too much towards it just being very easy to always get five. I don't think Bone Reapers are in that place. I've certainly played recent games with Bone Reapers when I have not scored five battle tactics. It's also just very variable. Some armies have really bad faction battle tactics and some have very good ones.
I think we'll see. I suspect as the addition goes on, they might get easier. That's been the brief amount of addition we've seen so far. That seems to be the trend. Because the, I was talking about the Fire Slayers ones with the Deepkin battle tactics are doable.
I think same doable. For Fire Slayers. None of them looked super obvious, you will always do this, but there are a few of them that I can definitely imagine taking.
I mean, Deepkin have a battle tactic for kill things on high tide, which, spoilers, that's the game plan.
I
think the Fire Slayer ones aren't quite at that level, but there are a couple that are certainly going to be in the mix of things I'll be looking at. What's your take on this then, Rich? Do you like faction battle tactics?
As someone who has played most of his recent games with Magikin, who have faction battle tactics, I like them. I think I broadly agree with both of you that maybe the game would be simpler without them, but I didn't really feel like they were needed before they existed. I do like that the Magikin ones at least sort of range from the sublime to the ridiculous. In like, there are some that are like requiring you to grow trees in your enemy's backfield and stuff, which I think is cool and thematic and probably never going to get chosen. And then there are some that seem like very achievable. I think there's a good one for seven models dying as a result of disease rolls, which is, if you pick it at the right time against the right army, like you're never going to pick that against Gargants. But if you're playing something like Cities of Sigmar army on one of the turns where you're getting a load of stuff in and getting a load of disease points off, then it feels like feasible at least.
My favourite Fire Slayer one is that there is one for killing a hero with a Fire Slayer throwing axe. And Fire Slayer throwing axes are awful. They're very slightly less bad in the new book, but I honestly would almost rather they just scrapped them and you didn't have to roll dice for them. But it is going to make me just really tempted to take that battle tactic because it will be so embarrassing for my opponent if I ever score it.
Is that, that's the battle tactic they lampshade themselves, right? Like they acknowledge that the Fire Slayer throwing axe is a crap in the name of it. It's called like an ignoble death.
Yeah, it's something like that. Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
Yeah, I like that. That's see, I think that's what you should have, though. If you've got a mix of stuff like that, I think it's fine. I feel like a lot of the negative perception of faction battle tactics came from, especially like the first ones, the Stormcast ones that were released, where it was like, you know, like Stormcast being the kind of Swiss Army knife faction already had quite a lot of ways of scoring like the standard battle tactics, and then we're given two or three that were just like, ah, so these are like the standard ones but easier. And that, I think, put people off. And you think, like, if every faction was going to get those, then yes, it makes you kind of a bit
uncomfortable. Yeah. But we'll see how they go. I think generally when they first came out and we were talking about them, our concern was like, this is going to be super imbalanced between, there's going to be some armies that really benefit from this and some that really don't. And like the, like you said, the exact first release was Stormcast getting a pile of them of very variable quality, and Uruk Warclans one per faction and like a Kragnos one, and you're like, okay, yes, you've given them the same number in print, but is that how the Uruk Warclans book works? I don't think it is.
No.
So yeah, good old Bone Splitters got the killer monster battle tactic again. So we can kill two monsters and score it twice.
That's just thematic.
It is thematic. And if the army had any rules about fighting monsters, that would be even better. But
not that you're bitter.
Not that I'm bitter, no. I'll do it with my 4+4+, no rend damage, one attacks.
It'll be fine, right?
It'll be fine.
I can't wait for the Nighthorn book to come out, where presumably all of the faction battle tactics will be like, suffer a deeply ironic fate.
Yeah.
I'm a whole unit on the charge. Something like that.
I'm excited for our Sad Boy Nighthorn special episode that we will presumably do to cry.
yeah.
Well, I can't allow myself to feel any hope with that armor. I've been too many times.
This is just Nighthorn roleplay at this point. Speaking of
feeling sad Nighthorn.
We had a game.
We did. Some might call it a game. So after Battle Scroll 1, which sort of pretty much coincided with the new Maggotkin book that you were very excited about, you took out your brand new Maggotkin army, and I thought, oh, you can take Nagash and Nighthorn now, that's cool, and took Nagash and Nighthorn, and we had a game, and certainly learned some lessons. I did, anyway.
Yeah, the lesson I learned was that if I was the Supreme Lord of the Undead, I would simply not roll a double one on my first casting roll of the game.
It was the moment where I was like, okay, I take D3 mortal wounds for that. And you were like, okay, whatever. And then I was like, and then I cannot cast any more spells this phase. And you were like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's semi-important. I mean, beyond the double one instant miscast was extremely funny. But probably that alone was not the nail in the coffin of you destroying me there. That was, I think, probably the worst anyone has ever deployed an army in Age of Sigmar.
Really, showering yourself in praise.
What scenario
were we playing?
It's the three objectives, and they can only be captured by heroes, and I put all my very slow heroes in the middle of my deployment zone.
Perfect.
Perfect. Absolutely no way to touch any of those objectives in my first turn. In an army that has native deep strike. Absolute genius move.
I hadn't even thought about that at the time.
Absolutely brilliant. And I knew in my turn one when I started measuring things that this was going to go in so badly for me. Doing the most full tilt moves in the world, like picking kill your general battle tactic, putting it all on Hand of Dust, and then when that didn't kill him, just marching Nagash off to the other side of the board. Like, I could very easily have made that charge and just chopped him up with Nagash, but I was just like, no, I'm not going to do that now. I tried once. It didn't work. It's not happening.
It didn't go with the 50-50 spell. So
fuck it. So yeah, just
should we? Do you want to talk a bit about the lists we took?
Go for it. Tell me about your Megakin. I thought it was quite good. Your army.
Yeah, I was pretty pleased with it, given its its existence basically as the things that I have painted.
Mm. Was it the same list you ran against me?
I don't think it was, actually. No, it was different. I think it will have had a lot of the same things in it, but no, I think it was different. So I think when I played you, Laura, I used the Droning Guard, the Puscoil-based allegiance.
Mm. I like that one.
You certainly had Puscoils in the list.
I mean, they're very good, even not in that allegiance. But
that's the 8-inch pregame move, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe so. I get a little bit mixed up when I'm not sat in front of the book as to what gives out the pregame moves and what gives out the deep strike negative one to hit.
I'm not currently on Wikipedia.
That's fine. We don't even know that website exists. It's fine. So anyway, this list versus Matthew, I was running the Blessed Sons, which is when a mortal model dies, you roll a number of dice equal to its wound characteristics, and on a certain result, it deals disease points to things near it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like an extra way of putting disease points out.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good, but your models have to die.
Yes, so it's that classic thing of something can seem really good until you realise that it only happens when things die. And it is limited to mortal models, so if that was any models, then I can see the argument for getting 80 plague bearers and just shifting them up the board slowly, but it's mortals only, so although and when a...
Your opponent has to actually kill some models as well.
Yeah, yes, so we probably didn't see the largest impact of it in this game. Now, I took a great and clean one as my general with the bile blade and the massive bile sword because it's basically the only correct loadout now.
Is that the exact reverse of what was previously the correct loadout?
So I think previously people used to go for the bell and flail.
Perfect.
Or they might have gone for the bile blade still, but the bell definitely.
I think if people took more than one, they would take different loadouts before those. So hopefully people had at least something that is still relevant now.
So I have a second one that's half painted. And that's got a bell and a flail, just because they were weapons that I didn't put on the first one.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I think the likelihood of ever running two is low enough that I'm fine with that. But the great and clean one in this third ed book actually has some sort of offensive potential as well as just being a support piece. So that's that. He was the general, so I gave him the Nurgle's Nail artifact. Now I'm trying to remember what that is. I think Nurgle's Nail is the one that makes one of you pick one of your weapons and it does disease on fives instead of sixes, because the trick with the Great and Clean one is that one of his weapons is Horde of Nurglings, which is 15 dice attack. So although you're not really expecting it to do any damage, you just use that to pile disease points.
An artifact on it? That's not a mount?
On the Great and Clean one?
Yeah. On the pile of Nurglings.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't count as a mount.
That's crazy.
No, it's wild, isn't it?
That's rude. Hang on, I'm writing an email to the FAQ team.
I have not got in this written copy of my list what my command trait was, so pass.
what else did I say? Where they can't use command abilities, because that's really annoying.
That is really annoying.
I think that might be mortals only again.
It is, yeah, because you always see it on the Lord of Afflictions, don't you?
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, the Lord of Afflictions with the split horn helm to get a 4-up ward, and then anything within 7 inches, I think, is just can't issue commands, can't receive commands. It's amazing.
It's a little bit fiddly because it's different between within and holy within, which is a bit annoying. But it's
the benefit of the Nurgle player, though, that within holy within, it's different.
It's pretty obscene as a combination.
Yeah, it's really annoying against Bone Reapers because without command abilities, they just really lack the capacity to do enough damage to kill him. So yeah. He can go into 20 Mortar Guard and they'll just spend the whole game slapping each other, pretty much.
Yeah. God. I remember when we played that game, there was a point of me being like, are these Mortar Guard ever going to die? And then I think like one turn after that, he just like killed them all.
Yeah. I kind of find them. Mortar Guard are really, really tanky until someone has one really good turn and then they all just vanish.
Yeah.
So they almost always do die eventually, but in the until they do, they're just really irritating, bringing loads of them back again.
Yeah. Just to whiz through the rest quickly. Lord of Blights, good enough foot hero to support some Blight Kings. And then two units of five Blight Kings. A Sloppity Bile Piper, again, just sort of support some Plague Bearer based units, and then 10 Plague Bearers and 3 Plague Drones. Nice. You can do some nice combos with the Bile Piper being able to affect the Plague Drones as well, just to up their output a bit.
It really does up their output as well.
Yeah. A Beast of Nurgle, which they seem really good, actually.
Yeah, they're really good.
It's a scroll. Really I feel like it's a scroll you look at initially and go, like, eh. Like, not sure, but
I think it's just the impact.
They're popping up in lists, and those impact hits are amazing.
Why they do impact hits, we'll never understand. But
big lolloping chunks of flesh, I guess.
Yeah. It's kind of seamy. If you've never been jumped on by a big dog.
Yeah. True. Last but not least, we won't hit that hard by the dog.
No.
Yeah. Last but not least, 2 Puskoll Blightlords. And if you want to take issue with something dealing impact hits, then these are a good candidate because they're flies. But they're real workhorse as well. They're not the most mobile thing in AOS by any means, but certainly compared to a lot of the rest of the Magickin army, they are. And
the army is so slow.
Yeah. No movement.
You have some
other than deep strike.
Yeah. You have to have some kind of fly, I think.
That's it. Most of it in a battle regiment to give me 2 drops, I think. Yeah, I did do the sensible thing. I kept the Puskoils out of the battle regiment because they didn't fit, but then deployed them off the board, I think. So you kind of not giving anything away. Magickin lists are crazy. That's nearly 130 wounds, which seems like a lot to chew through when they all have a 5-up ward as well.
Yeah, although the bone splitter in me says it's not that many wounds.
Well, yeah, but, you know.
Slightly higher quality of wound.
Perhaps. What, remind me what your list was.
So I was running Nagash, the Supreme Lord of the Undead, Lady Alinda, the Mortok of Grief. I took the Krulghast Cruciator.
Oh, what a guy.
Krulghast is like, for me, I think, like, just the purest distilled Nighthorn. a new hero model, like 5 wounds, support piece, absolutely piss damage. But the support thing he does looks like it's really good on paper. So your brain tricks you into thinking, oh, he's good. He's good. I'll take him. And he's shit. He's just... the problem... So the concept there between that Krulghast and the Gash combo is that when the Gash's scroll got rewritten in the first battle scroll, they changed his command ability. So the old one was reroll hits and saves of 1 at board wide battle shock immunity. And the new one is you get +1 to your deathless minions save on a unit. And the Krulghast Appreciator has an ability whereby if he murks a unit with his, does any damage with his shooting attack, he has an aura around him afterwards that gives you +1 to your deathless minions. So theoretically there, the combo is that you get a 4+ deathless minions save. So if you get that combo off, you're looking at a unit with a 4+ or 5+ unrendable armor save, and then a 4+ ward. So super difficult to shift, like about as difficult as a unit gets in Age of Sigmar to shift. The problem is that combos just does it. Realistically, you've got to keep a unit within a wholly within bubble around the Cruciator, which limits, you know, your ability to move and fight around him. So it's very much a defensive ability. Like, once you're getting into the realm of charging out, especially with big units, and you kind of want to use it on a big unit to maximize its potential, it makes it then difficult to keep them within the wholly within bubble. And his attack is not very good. So you have to do, going to look up his scroll just because I don't remember. I think they only have 4 attacks. Yeah. So he's got 4 shots at 12-inch range with Ren 2, but damage 1. There is a high... That attack profile contains a lot of potential to do nothing. and once that little bit of piddly shooting does nothing, he is doing very little for you. The 120 points cost you. He's just peak Nighthaunt, really. He tricks you into thinking it's good and there's a combo that you can pull off, and you will not pull that combo off. But, you know, you live and you learn, and I'll never put him on the table again.
New book coming. He might be good.
He might be good. He won't be good.
Hey, he's going to have to compete with that guy with a book.
That's
probably a 5-wound buff hero with a 12-inch shooting attack.
Hey, if he's got a shooting attack, you know, maybe, who knows? He's going to be bad. alongside them, what else did I take? So I took 2 units of 5 hex wraiths. So I took this in the Emerald Host subfaction, which has 2 things. So it buffs your hex wraiths, so they get +1 attack, which is very nice. They do mortal wounds on 6s, everyone's favourite Age of Sigmar rule. And they also act as very efficient bodyguards for Lady Olynder. They bodyguard on a 2+. So they are very good at tanking wounds on her, and she is a very fragile hero who has some very powerful attacks. She pretty much reliably starts doing d6 mortal wounds to enemy units when she gets within 9 inches, I think, 8 inches. Whatever the wording is, so you specifically can't do it out of deep strike, is the range on all her abilities. So being able to keep her alive and keep doing that is really good. That's actually a good combination. And the other thing Emerald Host is, which is really powerful, is you pick an enemy hero and you subtract 1 from their armor save for the whole game. you just do that once. It's at the start of the game. But again, doing that on super tanky heroes is great to be able to, like, you know, the classic thing in AOS 3 is a 3+ save hero save stacking to a 2+ unrendable save. So being able to remove that ability from them is good. Or like on the Great Unclean one, base 4+ save heroes, they start getting really fragile really quick.
Yeah, definitely.
And then what else did I take with them? I think I took 20 chain rasps and 1 unit of 8 Miamorn Banshees. Just because I have fond memories of Miamorn Banshees from back in the Legion of Grief days, and I'll never give them up.
How many even did you take to that event?
24? 24.
What a totally reasonable number of the same 4 sculpts.
But probably the most fun army I've ever used. That army was an absolute gas. And now I have 24 of them. Which will definitely serve me well in the... My real fear in the new book is the 30... What are they called? Chain ghasts that I have.
Oh,
I've forgotten about that. I
forgot you'd done that. Have you painted those?
No. We'll see what the new book has.
I mean, I have similar fears for the 40 Blade Guys Revenants I have.
They might be
the
right.
Same event you took those Banshees to.
Yeah.
Like, it's put me off buying the new battle box with another guys. 10 in, that way.
Something will have to be good in the new book. One of you might look out and it'll be the thing you've got loads of.
My
if you ever own a Nighthaunt army, you would not be feeling that positive. I'm sure they might be fun.
We'll see.
I think.
So the big thing about Nagash and Nighthaunt and why he's quite exciting is that Nighthaunt, he knows the whole spell lore of any Death Army he goes into, despite not being a part of that army. And what the Nighthaunt spell lore has is loads of spells that are rubbish on Nighthaunt spellcasters, but are really good on Nagash. So they've got a spell, for example, to reroll hit rolls on one of your melee weapons, which is incredible on Nagash when you're slapping people with a Ren 2 damage 3 sword, and it's less incredible when you're using it on Ragnar the Grim Hailer with his 3 attack scythe. So it sort of unlocks that spell lore, which is actually really strong. But Nighthaunt as an army have traditionally had no real way to make use of it. So you just end up taking like maybe one caster, probably Lady Alinda, and casting maybe like one debuff spell with her, and that's that.
Soul Cage.
Yeah, or Shade Mist, right? Or basically there's two spells that you'd traditionally take in army. Nagash sort of makes that whole lore available to you. It's quite exciting. And it also takes away some of the decision paralysis you might theoretically have around who to cast Mystic Shield on. It's always going to be Nagash. It should probably be anyway, but at least you don't even have to think about it.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, conceptually, I think that's an army that could work. If I was to ever do it again, which I won't, until the new book is out, the Cruciator and the Mirmon Banshees, they are big do-nothing units that need to go away forever.
I think you'd be better off taking like another 30 Hex Wraiths, or not 30, 20.
30 would be good.
Well, yeah, I don't think that point of exchange makes sense. But
I think that's a big problem with the army in general, though, right? Is I think it's a huge model range, and a lot of the answers to what should I be doing with it is just take Hex Wraiths.
Yeah, since Emerald Host has existed, Hex Wraith has been the default answer. Mm. I think, surprisingly, like one of the best things in the army is just Chain Rasp Hordes.
Yeah.
Maybe slightly less with new coherency, but not really, because I still don't
quite They're fine. Together. 25 mil bases. They love it.
Kind of fine in theory, but not in practice, because Nighthaunt are the worst army for getting attached to each other as soon as you put them anywhere on a table.
And then if you add in my extra problem of having all the bases magnetized, but all of the chain rasps having been done at different times, so not all the magnets in the same way around, sometimes like one will catch an axe as you pick it up, and then that'll bring like 8 more with it, like a barrel of monkeys. Yeah, but like I think they're pretty great. Maybe not so much in third with the limit on reinforcement, but yeah, like big unit of Chain Rask, 5 up unrendable is, you know. I mean, I feel like with a 5 up save in AOS, the real problem with it is not that you're only saving a third of the time. It's that against a lot of things, you're suddenly not saving at all. And so you're still getting a chance at saving. You've got your ward as well. They put out an okay number of attacks. I think they have 2 attacks each.
They do,
Then in big units, they reroll ones to wound. You can give them reroll ones to hit with
you
one
can
of
give
the
them every possible
weird characters.
Like, with every, yeah. Plus 1 to hit, plus 1 to wound, plus 1 attack. You can give them all of that and reroll ones to hit. All of that, yeah, really.
So, yeah. I think they're still really good, but they're a nightmare army from a like physical point of view, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, Chain Rasps, I think, are like, for me, they sit alongside Skaven, where they're a unit that you probably didn't think about when it came out, but they really suffer from the change of being max 30 rather than max 40.
Yeah.
Just because they're designed around like a specific mechanic of bringing them back. Having 10 less as your baseline.
Yeah.
Makes that job harder, but. So how did that go as a game? That went really badly for me, I think we've alluded to.
We sort of, yeah, I mean, you had your turn one. Like you said, you didn't deploy very well. Mm-hmm. I doubt I deployed incredibly tactically.
You deployed in a way that you could reach the objectives.
Yes, I had to sort of send a great and clean one reasonably far forwards, and then sort of try and send the Lord of Blights to one flank and the Bile Piper to the other flank. Yeah. Drop some drones in to do some sort of harassing. But effectively, yeah, it was the Nurgle strategy of push a wave of stuff forward, let a wave of things break over you, and then just start building up disease and try to outlast it. So I think that the sort of significant fight in the game was a Linda and a cavalry bodyguard.
Hex Wraith, thank you.
Bodyguard in the middle, sort of crunched into a couple of units of
it's the Great Unclean One and some the chunky infantry, the mortals.
Yeah, I'm glad that none of us can remember the names of any.
It's your argument.
Yeah.
Blight Kings.
Putrid Blight Kings. Oh, thank you.
Putrid Blight Kings. Thank you. They sort of, and I think the Plague Bearers might have been there in the end as well, actually. They just sort of
kind of the Plague Bearers went and killed Nagash.
Oh, yeah, they did. They did.
They did.
It's they quite embarrassing.
The Plague Bearers and the Bile Pipers went and just whittled Nagash down.
It wasn't even a whittling, it was two combat phases.
Whittling? yeah, I remember being slightly perturbed that Alinda could like pass off a huge amount of hits onto a bodyguard unit when, I mean, you can never guarantee anything, but like that was almost guaranteed to like completely overkill them, but none of it gets like carried back. I remember being a bit perturbed by that, but that's just the wording of the attack sequence in Age of Sigmar.
It's a really weird thing. Although you say that, and then he didn't actually kill them.
Yeah. So I did have some pretty flubbed combats in that middle. Alinda lasted a couple of turns, I think, but just kind of everything around kind of fell to pieces.
This is
Nagash going and dying to Plague Bearers on the flank was sad.
Deeply sad. That tends to be my experience with the army. Alinda is very good and lasts longer than you think she will. Partly because of Hex Race, but
she's resilient. Yeah.
She's fairly resilient, and heroic healing's maybe less good than it used to be, but she makes good use of it when she can.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's a bit of a... She's surprising. She does a bit of everything. I think people can be surprised, especially when they take, like, 12 mortal wounds off her.
But, yeah. Yeah, she but, can give them up, right?
Yeah, that one... That game got ground out pretty quickly, didn't it? There was that... You swept up one flank, and we had a big grind in the middle, and I swept up the other flank. Yeah. And it was always going to sort of come down to a combination of the middle fight and then how those two flank fights went. They both went really well for you.
Yeah.
So that they, was sort of what you wrote then.
We called it at like top of turn three, I think.
Top of turn three, yeah.
Which is really great when you've driven for 90 minutes to my house to come and play Warhammer with me.
It's fine. I got to meet your cat, and that's really the...
Yeah. I mean, he's blessed us by not interrupting this podcast so far. So.
It's been cat-free.
Yeah, I know.
An hour of no cats. It's been incredible.
Well, we got four cats between the three of us. Cats. So.
Yeah, although Jasper, my cat, is currently not allowed upstairs because the baby is asleep. And he cannot... He's not allowed to meow in her face, so...
That's not an unreasonable restriction, I guess. I'm sure he doesn't feel that way.
But... He does not, no. No, he's quite... He just wants to snuggle in the evening. That's all he ever wants. So, anyway, this is the cat chat.
Yeah, it's very relevant.
This is Warhammer chat. So, you guys played Bone Reapers and Maggotkin? That sounds like the most exciting game of AOS that could possibly happen. How did that go?
I think it was quite exciting. There were definitely some big drawn-out fight moments. I'm desperately trying to remember what happened, but I think we played the same scenario. So it was the one that only leaders can score objectives.
Is it like the zigzag deployment, right?
Yeah. And I was quite concerned because my army wants to be a big bubble and it does not want to spread its three heroes out and have one on each objective. But you had one of the named mortal heroes.
Yeah.
So one who isn't Orgots and isn't Blow Up, and I can't remember what his name is.
Morbidex Twiceborn.
That's the one.
Mortal avatar of the Nurglings. Yeah.
So he spent the whole game standing on the middle objective while I used the Bone Tithe Shrieker to block him off from being able to get anywhere. And it was quite funny.
He is amazing. Like, at the end of the combat phase, he just heals half of the damage that's on him every turn. It's so good.
Yeah. So I think I just assumed I was never going to be able to kill him and just left him alone to stand on an objective for the whole game. I will admit, I don't remember exactly what happened. I think there were some quite grindy fights between Mortec Guard and the Puskal Blightlords.
Yes, I remember broadly, I think what happened was that you, for the one objective, like one flank, you pushed Arcan up to and screened him quite well with a combination of Mortec Guard, and I think you brought the Death Riders in behind him eventually.
Yeah.
And then on the other flank...
You had a Bilepiper or something by himself for quite a while, didn't you?
Yeah, I had a Bilepiper very slowly running at the other objective, and then, like you said, Morbdex and in the middle, and then like some the usual Blight Kings. And I think I dropped a Lord of Afflictions and two... I think I had a unit of four and a unit of two Puskals, and I think I sort of dropped them all vaguely into your backline try and kind of cause some chaos.
Yeah, so they were holding my army up. And then it came down at the end to, could I throw Arcan across the board quickly enough to grab your objective that was being held by a solo Bilepiper or something like that? But I had failed to factor in that the Lord of Afflictions and his very annoying command ability meant that Arcan couldn't use the command ability that would give him extra move, so he couldn't actually get there. I think that was a critical moment towards the end, but it was quite close.
I think I can't remember what the actual numbers were, but I think we might have worked out that it was like if you do the extra move, guarantee yourself or try and get a big run or a charge, and you'd be able to do it. And then we worked out that without that command ability, you would like an inch out of range or something. Yeah,
yeah, which is quite typical of my OBR experiences, is that I always have high hopes for what Arcan might achieve, and he rarely does.
He seems such an important piece for the whole army in three, right? He does so much that nothing else does.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's really critical. The fact that he can reasonably reliably cast three spells and bringing back lots of skeletons and actually having mobility, which is definitely not to be underestimated in that army, is super important. Yeah. It's a decision about at what point do you get him to do stuff, because he also doesn't have many wounds on a four up save, and he's rarely what you want to put your Mystic Shield on. So I have had games where I've just committed him to something and then he's just dead, and you think, okay, that was really silly.
I'm sort of semi-surprised he didn't get an FAQ update, because when they sort of rewrote the scrolls for the other Mortarks a bit in the Gravelords book, they did go up in tankiness. I think they went to 3+ saves. And he would benefit a lot from that.
Yeah, it would be really, really nice. But there's nothing in, I don't know, maybe Catacross has a 3+ save. Nothing I own in the Bone Reavers book has more than a...
Yeah, no, Catacross does,
Yeah, okay. I guess maybe because Arcan had a bad time in the lore, they decided he didn't get the boost that the others got. I don't know. But he is, he's quite fun. I quite enjoy... I don't think I've got a hang of how to use him yet. The sort of challenge really of how much to screen him at the start is quite tricky, and trying to figure out how to use the protection of Nagash spell that lets him potentially teleport around is an interesting one, because he's the reliable spellcaster. There are always about five spells I want him to cast, and trying to pick which three of them he's actually going to do is an interesting choice, I guess.
I almost threw a game away at Blackout 2, a really cheeky protection of Nagash that I just forgot was on him. Very, very rude spell, that. Very rude.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because obviously Bone Reapers are, especially like your Mortec build, feels really critically weak to that kind of ability to be gummed up either by the flies or like when I think played versus Bone Splitters. It's just like, even if you win the fight, which you will, if I can just throw an army into you early enough, they just aren't enough turns in the game to score.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think the thing I need to improve at the most with OBR is deployment, because they have some units with mobility, so the Death Riders can get around, and even the Necropolis Stalkers aren't too bad. But with the big unit of 20 Mortec Guard, often where you start them is where they're going to spend the game. And I have definitely not got the hang of... The thing I'm least good at, I think, with Age of Sigmar is having a battle plan that I'm committed to before I deploy. I'm quite bad at just going, I'll just put stuff down and then I'll figure out what I'm doing. And you can't do that with 20 more tech guard, or they're just going to end up hanging out halfway between two objectives in a big grindy fight, achieving nothing. So that's the thing I need to work on with them. I probably need to like sit down with a list of scenarios and just practice how do I deploy for this scenario, and have, you know, obviously you need to adapt it based on who you're playing and what the terrain's like and stuff. But I just need a better plan than I currently find I start games with.
Yeah, that's definitely mid-table brain, I think. If I had one thing I wanted to work on, it would be to have any plan at all with deployment other than how our model goes here.
Yeah. And with Gargants, that was fine, because if you had three Gargants, you just put one in the middle, one on the left, and one on the right, and it was probably fine.
Yeah,
but it doesn't work with OBR.
Yeah, I get like with Deepkin, it was pretty easy. I put a turtle down and I put the whole army all within 15 inches of it.
Yeah.
But
same with Lumineth. You put a space where Teclis is going to go, and then you make sure there's something in front of him and something to each side of him, and it's all within 18 inches.
I think there was a genuine decision of, should I put my Bone Tithe Nexus on, or is it going to reduce my deployment space so much that I will end up with really suboptimal deployment because the Bone Tithe Nexus is just too much in the way?
Does it have to go in your deployment zone now?
It does have to go in your deployment zone. If it won't fit, you're allowed to remove another piece of terrain and put it down instead. But usually it does just about fit, but only if it takes up a prime amount of space where you really want to be putting 20 more tech guards.
That's awkward.
And it's good enough that you want it if it can be there. But I think sometimes the right answer is just to go, no, I'd rather, especially if there's already big terrain pieces down. I think sometimes you're just better off not having it.
Yeah. How does that work with list building? Because obviously in the app, when you build a list, you add the piece of terrain. If you like submit it as part of your list to an event, is it still a choice per game whether you actually use it or not normally, or is it like a, if it's on your list, you should try and use it kind of thing?
That is a good question.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I've always assumed it was an optional thing, but I don't actually know what the war scroll.
I think in AOS 2,
check the war scroll.
In 2, it was. But whether they've...
It might actually be the terrain placement rules rather than the war scroll. I don't know where it would be. I've certainly had games with first letters when I've just forgotten
that. It does have a pitched battle profile, so Rich might actually be right here in that if it's on your list, you should be deploying it. Which makes me think I probably, unless I'm running a decent number of trolls, will probably never take the Gloomside Shipwreck.
There you go. The literally in the setup section on the war scroll is after territory is determined, you can set up this faction to write features.
Good.
Can versus must.
That makes life a lot easier for the Bone Reaper players.
Because the Bone Tithe Nexus is really decent. I played. It's a bit dependent on can you roll 4 pluses. But one of the things you can roll a 4 plus to do. I think it might even mean they charge on a D6 rather than 2D6, which is extremely good.
That's extremely good. How do you feel about... Because obviously part of the problem Bone Reapers can have is like reaching out and touching things that are far away on the board. How are you feeling about the Bonapults? Do you just think no rend AOS 3, is that a problem?
So I ran one for a while because I think... the threat of being able to mess up coherency is quite useful. But yeah, I just found that with no rend, they were just, it just wasn't doing enough to be worth the points because you could, OBR really struggle for points. They don't really have any cheap things. So I swapped it out for another 3 Necropolis Stalkers, and I think they do more. It's a bit dependent on what list you're playing against, but in general, I think it was a bigger sort of psychological threat than it was actually achieving anything. And I can't remember exactly how many points it is, but 200 odd points is too much for something that isn't going to kill anything.
Yeah, it's the no rends and then the anti-hero shot. It's so hard to use, right? Like,
I mean,
especially against the kind of heroes that AOS 3 wants you to take.
So that shot is good, but it's mainly good because it gives you the threat of breaking coherency of an elite unit. And so once you've used it, it kind of loses half its value. And it is also something that you can use, and it does absolutely... If you try and kill just a bog-standard model, it will almost always do it. But against a small hero, it can very easily whiff and not have achieved anything. I don't think they're rubbish. I think there's a case for taking one. But you don't get a huge amount of bodies in an OBR army anyway, unless you're really stacking it with Mortec Guard. And I think I'd rather have stuff that can also get on an objective, which the catapult is never really going to do unless it's standing on one in your own territory, and there's no shortage of stuff that can stand on an objective in my territory. Okay.
That's fair enough.
But it is a really cool model.
That's such a cool model.
It's enormous as well.
I feel like every time I look at it, there's like a detail that I haven't noticed before. Like, it took me a long time to realise it has legs. Like, oh, it's just so cool.
It's got a skull.
They're full of that, right? Like, they're actually really characterful.
I enjoyed painting the Underworld's Warband, and as is my style, sort of went like, oh, Bone Reapers. I managed to resist the army box at Christmas. So, you know. I'm a saint. What can I say?
Sometimes that's all it takes, right? Just resist the army books.
Yeah. Yeah, because I haven't since sat like going, I could buy this and this and this and this. Like, it's the big sort of flagship purchase that's exciting. So,
yeah. I'm worse. I get excited about whole army.
Yeah. It's bad. I'm impressed with your Bone Splitters sort of commitment. In that it feels like you might actually be in danger of like painting them, which is
I've not painted an army. It's just sometimes it's very slow. I think my hope is that they won't be too bad. I would really like to take them to an event sometime this year. The AOS competitive stats say they're the worst army in the game, and I don't think they're the worst army in the game. I think no one plays them. And, like, I think there's stuff in that army beyond just the Wurgog Prophet comedy zap mask as well. So I'd like to either prove myself right or be proved spectacularly wrong. And either way is content.
How many Wurgog Prophets do you have?
I only have two Wurgog Prophets. You tend to see with Bone Splitters players, like, people will either spam Oops or Wurgog Prophets or Oops or Savage Big Bosses, who are also very good. I like kind of having a bit of both. So the list I'm planning on painting up first is two Wurgogs, two Savage Big Bosses, and just like two other heroes. Because I think the other heroes are also pretty good. Like,
Wardog's pretty good, right?
Yeah, it's like an 80-point wizard who has... there's like a dance he does, he can do a dance instead of casting a spell, and like all three dances are pretty good. So one can heal a hero, and the sequencing on that, I think, the timing on it is the same as when you use the Wurgog mask. So you can use it to heal your Wurgog Prophet before he does his death stare, if needs be, which is quite good. Because, you know, like a D3 wound heal on that, and then the heroic heal and can repair the damage you've done to yourself in previous turns. Can be really important when you're trying to stare a big thing to death. He's got a +1 to cast, which is really important because Bone Splitters do actually have some useful spells. And he's got the real money dance, I think, is the +1 save dance. So, like, the armor saves in general in the army are terrible. Like, the default save in Bone Splitters is a 6. The units with shields are a 5. So I think people write off save stacking on anything that isn't base 3-up save. But actually, like, if you think about it, on your base, like, Savage Uruk unit with a spear and a shield, he's looking at a 5-plus save and a 6-plus ward. But if you Mystic Shield them, which is very doable, because you've got so many wizards, if you do this dance save on them and you all-out defense them, that's like a 4-up ignoring Ren 2. That's a, like... And if you can combo that with the 4-plus ward turn, that's actually a unit that sticks around. Because 10 of those models is 20 wounds. So
yeah,
20 wounds with a 4-up. I think I've got most of that combo off in games. And they just kind of don't die. They just sit there. They might explode a turn later when you lose the 4-up ward. But they do work.
As long as you time it right, though, that's like a fulcrum ability, isn't it? So.
Yes, or unless you
don't play in an army that has any shooting at all, because your enemy can remove that 4 plus ward ability by killing a model with 6 wounds and a 6 plus save. So,
well, when you put it like that,
if you're looking for some anti-bone splitters tips, shoot their general immediately and they are lose their main ability. So, okay, so that's sort of the games we've been playing, which sounds like we've all been pushing rubbish uphill and will continue to do so into the near future.
I don't think Maggot Kin are.
No, they're not.
I told you, I'm going to take more sentiments.
Rich has just spent an hour talking about how he's been doing well with Maggot Kin and he's banned from taking them to Brotherhood, which is the team event we're going to in June. So that's good. I don't feel bad about that at all. Rich is looking sad.
One of us has got to be forced to take our slightly shooting focused army and actually paint some more models for it. And it appears I've drawn the short straw. So
I can take Caradon Overlords if we want to do really badly.
I mean, the dirty secret of Deepkin is actually you can build quite a shooty Deepkin army.
Get that curse off.
No, even with curse, to be honest. Like,
still going even without that, you're getting 3 shots with Reavers, right? At close range?
No, so they rewrote the Reaver scroll.
Oh. Yeah, wow. Yeah, there's competitive awareness right here.
They're always 2 shots now, but they're better shots.
Ah, right, okay.
The secret sauce is that for some reason they made the shark gun D3 damage.
Oh.
When it used to be 1, and they were already quite good at doing chip shooting. Yeah. So now you can just pick up all units with them.
Is that the harpoon or the net?
The harpoon. So I think the net you probably don't take, which is sad because I've got 2. I think like 1's maybe okay, but you don't want to over-invest in them.
Does it still do the pylon cancel thing?
So it still, in the turn you shoot it, there's no pylon, which I found maybe slightly more useful with Unleashing Hell. I think I used it to comedy effect to stop someone taking an objective with an Archeon because they couldn't pilot round the shark to get onto the objective. Very funny for me until the shark blew up. But the problem with that ability is like the way Deepkin fight is it usually doesn't mean much just because one of like 2 things is usually happening with a combat. Like one, we're so fast it's really easy to pin corners of a unit. So not being able to pile in doesn't make a huge difference there because they can't split units anyway. Or you're just going in and killing what you charge, right? Is quite often the way. And especially with how good having 2 high tides is.
Yep.
That's certainly a mechanic they put into the new book. So I suspect the net launcher just is surplus to requirements. And what I wish is, so like with the Volkite Berserkers, they split the scroll in half, right?
Yes, they even different cost weapon different loadouts. Amounts of points. No?
Yeah. And I really wish they'd done that with the shark, because I think the pew-pew gun shark probably should be more points than the net launcher shark.
Yeah.
It seems reasonable to me. But they didn't, so it is what it is. Like I said, I've got 2 painted, and I've got 3 of the harpoon ones, so I should be all right. Fuck it.
Sure, it'll be fine.
Yeah. I'm not planning on painting anything for that, but army.
That's fair.
Yeah. So, just as a bit of a palate cleanser from all that, before we sign off, you guys, just for a bit of a feel of how you're feeling with AOS at the moment, have you got any hopes and desires for the future? Rich?
I hope the new Nighthorn book means that I want to take my Nighthorn army off the shelf.
Yeah.
I don't need it to be game-breakingly good. I just would like some sort of fun options for playing with that army.
Yeah.
What else? Selfishly, I hope for another wave of Lumineth, maybe like a water temple. I'd like some more elves. No, not really. I hope, actually, I'm looking, it's not so much a hope because it's been announced, but I'm looking forward to seeing and hopefully attending some events using the newly announced GW organized play packs, which they've said they're extending to 40k and AOS as well as things like Underworlds. So,
yeah, get yourself some AOS class.
Is there's a finally, if there's a possibility, of doing some like little 3-game 1-day tournaments. I quite like that kind of format. I appreciate it. It's not the best colander for sorting the top 30 players in the world into a perfect ranking, but for people like me, it's good.
But if you just really want to be up some 12-year-olds, like, absolutely perfect store championship, right?
Yeah, exactly. You just pick one that's at a weird time or like in a weird location and only has 5 attendees, and then maybe you come away with a trophy.
Nice.
That's how I got my single piece of Underworld's glass. So,
you got to take the wins where you can get them.
Exactly. Where I can get them is definitely not a big national tournament. Yes. So,
I mean, you can only play what's in front of you, Rich. There's no shame.
Yeah, exactly. I guess those are my hopes. Some smaller events to go with the things we've got in the calendar, hopefully. So.
Yeah, it's true.
How about you, Laura?
I think I would like not all that much to change. I kind of felt like last autumn, before the sort of Omicron wave of COVID, I felt like I had reasonably got my head around AOS 3 and I played a few events and I felt like I had a grip on the meta. And now, having not played anything like properly competitive since then, I feel I'm completely behind on what lists are good and what lists aren't and how my armies work. And I really just want a few months of nothing massive changing to get my head around it again and kind of play some games, hopefully go to a few events. I guess we're getting a new General's Handbook at some point in the summer and it could change lots or it could change not very much. And I would kind of like this to be one where they keep the scenarios mostly the same and just tweak them, rather than going, here are 12 whole new scenarios before you've even got your head around the last set.
How long would you like a realm season to last?
I think mainly because of the scenarios, I would be happy if it stayed in GUR and they tweaked stuff but didn't completely revamp everything. I think, I don't know, people who go to tournaments every weekend probably feel really differently about it, but I haven't yet played enough AOS 3 that I feel I need a whole new set of battle tactics and a whole new set of scenarios.
I've never played the Vice.
I love the Vice. It might be my favourite one.
I don't think
I've like never it. Played it.
Played it. I want to play it. Played it a few times. It's good. So I kind of want, you know, I'd like them to carry on trying to balance things and obviously bringing out new books and new models, but I would really just like the core stuff to stay reasonably the same for another 6 months or so that I can get back on top of it again. But the most important, my most important hope is that in the next White Dwarf, when there are Caradhron Overlords rules, I would like them to fix the rules for embarking from garrisoned boats so that it actually, embarking and disembarking, so that it actually works. I don't think they will, but I would really like it if they did.
Can you please describe the problem and what the solution should be? Because KO are a nightmare army to be on the other side of the table across, because they break every rule. I don't understand what's going on. I just smile and nod when my opponent tells me what they're doing.
So I'm going to get this wrong now, but I think the rule is that the rules for garrisoning say that you can only disembark, I think it is, at the end of the turn. At the end of the movement phase. Mm-hmm. And the Caradhron Overlord rules say that you cannot disembark after the boat has moved. So that means that if you have models on a boat and you want them to get off, the boat has to stay completely stationary for a turn in order for that to happen, which you're never going to do. So it means that you only are really going to put models on the boat if it's a hero or a unit that is going to stay on that boat forever. And so it just doesn't work for mobility and being able to move units of flying around the table.
Does the flying high redeploy count as a move for the purposes of that?
It does.
Okay. There's no way around it.
Yeah. So it just doesn't work at all. And it seems completely, I think I've got that right. I may have messed up a technical point, but broadly it means that it's very difficult to do any moving troops on and off boats mid-game. Yeah. And you are pretty much incentivized just to put stuff on a boat and keep it there, or put it on the board and keep it there. And that's really annoying.
I mean, as happy as I am to see KO players suffer, that doesn't sound particularly in keeping with the fiction of the army.
I would also like models garrisoned on boats to count towards objectives. Because I don't think there's any reason for that not to be the case in the way the game works now. But that's my stretch goal. I'll settle for just making disembarking work properly.
I feel like you need at least one of those two, right? Because
yeah. Right. I mean, I don't know. I really struggle with Caradhran, the army I find most fun to play. But I'm also conscious that in AOS 2, when they were good, they probably weren't very fun to play against. And even in AOS 3, I think it's either a none game because they don't have the damage to do anything. But any time KO are good, they risk being a negative play experience. And that makes me sad.
They feel like the balance on shooting and melee on them is wrong. They should be a mixed arms army, and they're not. But your no damage thing is right. Like the KO game I played earlier, I was talking about with like the, I played against two Ironclads and a gun hauler and some Dwarden in them. And he went for a first turn alpha strike with both Ironclads, including a charge with the Ironclad with like the battering ram hull. And he failed to kill. So he shot at two different units of the Nemati Thralls and didn't kill either unit. And then charged some eels and did not kill them either.
Yeah, like the thing I like, the thing I find fun playing with KO is their mobility. It's not the shooting. So I'd be perfectly happy if they dialed back the shooting, dialed up the melee, but kept them as a really mobile army. I don't want them to do is to turn into a non-mobile sort of gun platform, because that would just be boring, I think.
But, that's what Iron Drakes are for, right?
They're mobile. You get a soft screen bridge, and they can be as mobile as you want.
Yeah, really mobile. Yeah.
Yeah. Who needs an airship when you've got a skeletal bridge?
Yeah, when you've got a screaming bridge.
Well, you can play them in Living City, which is what I do, and then they come on in the corner of the board. They kill everything around them, and then they're just stuck there, going, "All right, now we're just going to walk very slowly across the board and try and find something else to do."
Perfect. That's perfect. Ideal. That.
How about you, Matthew? Any hopes and dreams? Keep it AOS focused.
I don't know where I could possibly go with that. I think, yeah, I'd like to be a not sad boy about Nighthaunt, but I won't piggyback on yours. There's some people have like picked apart the text on the upcoming Battle Tomes release thing, and when they talked about one of the Chaos books that could be coming out, there's maybe a hint that it could be Skaven. I've got like 5 to 10,000 points of Skaven. I can't remember.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So I would really love a Skaven book that wasn't Storm Fiends, the book. Don't get me wrong, I still like to play Storm Fiends because the models slap, but being able to take more War Scrolls than just that would be cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And like the current book just has so many problems. Like it just doesn't work in AOS 3 the way the Allegiance abilities are designed. It's designed for you having bigger units than you're legally allowed to take now.
Yeah. The sub factions are quite restrictive in the Skaven book as well, right? And in AOS 3, that might be a lot more open.
There are no sub factions in the Skaven book. So if you take something with a keyword, you just get the Allegiance abilities for that. So that bit's fine. The bit that's tricky gets around battle line. So Skaven battle line's really restrictive. It's basically only Clan Rats and Storm Vermin, who are slightly beefier Clan Rats. It's only them battle line, unless you go all in on a sub-faction, which I kind of don't mind. It's a bit annoying, but it'd be nice if they gave you a bit of breathing room on it. I agree. That would be quite nice. And fuck it. Just put the coherency rules in the bin. Set the bin on fire. Yeah. Never talk about it again. Just, man. Like, so I moaned previously to Rich that at Blackout, I was having to Tokyo Drift my eels into combat to get them all to fight, because I was taking a unit of 6, which is like the perfect fuck you number, and then use their 2-inch reach to fight for the back rank to fight over the bases of the first. And they've beautifully done in the new Deepkin book has made them 1-inch reach. So now,
oh no,
with the unit of 6, I can't Tokyo Drift them anymore. You can still
have to do the weird
triangle. You have to do the little triangle formations sat next to each other that's still a unit, and it looks awful. It's horrible to play with, but you have to do it. And I just don't want to have to bother with that. I want to put them in a nice line of six models. And if that means that some guy somewhere strings out a line of 10 dire wolves, I couldn't give a shit.
Yeah, I think I do get why it is how it is, because yeah, you do see some tables and like the wiggly string of 60 clan rats in the back table to like completely deny stuff is a bit weird, but I think
you could still do a wiggly line of 60 clan rats, because if you're on a 25 mil base, you can still string out to your heart's content.
Yeah, I know. It's just you got to crunch them up a bit more, right? But
yeah,
cure
is worse than a disease. But I understand what they're trying to stop, but I would like to stop. That's my real hope and desire. People moan a lot about save stacking, but I think we're so far into the edition now, and there's so many books that have been released with save stacking, like built in. Yeah. Either in like rend inflation or more mortal wounds or units with save stacking in mind and how they're costed. I just think you've got to live with it now. Like, yeah. It is what it is.
I think when AOS3 first came out, I was quite opposed to the sort of hero monster, god monster shift, because I'm not a massive fan of using named characters in games for as much as I've talked about Arcan. Okay. I think he's the only. That might even be the only named character I have run, but actually, it's fine. I've come round to it now, and it is a different sort of challenge. I'm not sure I would want the next edition to do the same thing, but I think you're right that this edition is invested in it, and it's just a thing that it would be too hard to fix at this point of the edition.
The absolute worst offenders of like Archeon 2+, rerolling everything, ignoring Ren 3. 4-up ward against mortals being gone is like that was a really positive change, because having played about against that twice, I never want to play against it again. It's like, I think there's like an initial shock as well to the first time your Ren 2 unit just does nothing, just feels weird in AOS, just not used to having high rend be that prolific. So we'll see how it goes. I suspect we're set down the road that they've decided on for everything. It will be the way it is, for good or ill. Thank you very much for joining me.
Shall we wrap up? And
we will wrap up.
Come back next time with some more games under the belt, hopefully.
More games under the belt. So hopefully next time we will be talking about Duke and Fire Slayers, unless something catastrophic happens and there's a new General's Handbook to have like huge hot takes about. Although I suspect generally we're not going to be a hot takes factory. We're going to be a mild wait and see.
Don't fix KO disembarking. I'm very prepared to have hot takes on the White Dwarf KO.
So I am torn now, because obviously I want you to be happy with your army, but also I do want to hear that rant. So fingers crossed the next White Dwarf fixes nothing. We get some real good content out of that.
Yeah.
That would be good.
Yeah. Like a rule that says replace the word garrison with embark or something in a KO army, but then don't explain it at all.
Yeah. Or just no mention of it and just like three battle tactics and that's it.
I think three battle
tactics and then extra point of rend on Arcanaut Company's melee weapons.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Effect. I want an extra point of rend on anything.
One battle tactic will be disembark 3 units in a turn.
Oh dear.
Beautiful stuff. Okay. All right. How do you wrap up a podcast, folks? Thank you for listening to this train wreck. We will get better.
Wow. So I suppose we should point out that we are being hosted by the lovely tinyplasticpeople.com, which we've all varyingly written things for and taken part in other podcasts for. So visit tinyplasticpeople.com
for articles, other podcasts, podcast specials, and this podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you could send an email to thetinyplasticpeople@gmail.com and maybe just put 3 and 2 in the subject so that it gets to the right people. And doesn't do what normally happens to me, which is I go through the inbox and get an email saying, Tiny Plastic People collaboration post suggestion, and get excited. And then it turns out that it's like a mass marketing email. What else could you do? For now, you could check out the Tiny Plastic Pals on Twitter or Instagram. Maybe we'll set up some 3 and 2 social media in time. But
in time, if people want to look at pictures of specifically your models, where would they go?
For me, I'd recommend they go to Twitter and find me at Rich Nutter, or they can find me at RJ Nutter on Instagram if they don't use Twitter, because they're a better person than me. But I don't post on it as much, so you're probably more likely to get a picture of my cat than my Warhammer on there.
Blessed.
I am at Scops947 on both Twitter and Instagram, I think. Nice. I post more on Instagram, so that's probably your best bet.
Yeah. I do not post pictures of models on Twitter because some real-life people might follow me on there. but you can find pictures of most models I paint on my awful Instagram branding of @37visibleskull. The 37 is spelled out as words.
Is it all one word as well?
All one word as well. As,
yeah. Oh, it's perfect.
Perfect stuff.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, we've been 3 and 2. Thank you for making it this far.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.